We actually sit in a very interesting spot right in the middle of the intersection of both these sides because we have natural yield products where the lender, which is could be yourself earning yield on your crypto, and the borrower, which is a trading firm borrowing crypto to trade, meet together in a marketplace. And so we're very uniquely positioned that, you know, lenders can earn more because there's no middleman on that on the interest rate side. It's an order book, which is open to anyone 24/7. And of course, borrowers get access to cheaper funds because, again, they're not being marked up by the middleman. So essentially, you know, we feel there's a, you know, we have a, we're a marketplace for buyers and sellers of US dollars.
This is the How to Trade Stocks and Options podcast, brought to you by 10MinuteStockTrader.com, where we cover finance, stocks, options, entrepreneurship, education, and money. And here's your host, voted one of the top 100 people in finance, Christopher Yule. Hey there, traders. Welcome back to today's How to Trade Stocks Options podcast. I have three special free gifts for you over at 10MinuteStockTrader.com. That's the Triple Stock Profits ebook you can get for free. That's a Bullish Power Cheat Sheet that you can get for free. And if that wasn't enough, at the brand new web class, How to Easily Discover Proven, Back-Tested, 100% Plus Winners, that is for free as well. You can get these three free gifts, all yours, at 10MinuteStockTrader.com. The Triple Stock Profits ebook, the free web class, and the Bullish Power Cheat Sheet. And all you got to do is go to 10MinuteStockTrader.com. Markets are people. People are predictable. Outlier can show you how to track market fear and greed with artificial intelligence on over 1,300 of the largest market cap names. Visit outlier.com to learn more. That's OVTLYR.com. They have a free pilot program for the rest of 2021 that you can get access to right now at OVTLYR.com. That's OVTLYR.com. Hey, make sure you subscribe and hit the bell so you'll be notified every time we give you more tools, tips, and tricks to help you trade faster and trade smarter every single week. Hey there, traders. Welcome back to today's How to Trade Stocks Options podcast. Today, we have a special guest online, Sudhu Arugaman. Now, Sudhu is the chief or co-founder at CoinFlex. And, you know, I'm really interested. I've got just a teensy bit in the crypto world, but I know that this is like the way of the future to most people. So, Sudhu, thank you so much for coming on. I'm really interested to talk to you about this.
Well, thank you for having me, Christopher.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sudhu's coming to us from Hong Kong very graciously at 12:04 in the morning there. And I really appreciate your time on that. So Sudhu, give me some of your backstory. Like, as a co-founder of CoinFlex, what was the initial kickoff point where you're like, I got to do something about this. I need to be part of this space.
Yeah, it was actually my background is from derivatives trading. So I've sort of 20 years of a background in futures and options across kind of equities and fixed income. And it was sort of only towards early 2017 that I started reading about crypto because it was becoming very, very popular. There was a lot of things in the news and I knew absolutely nothing about this emerging asset class. And because I came from this trading background from Merrill Lynch and DRW and a bunch of sort of hedge funds, I could have found it interesting that none of these kind of participants were in this market, and I was trying to find out more about it. And I kind of went to meetups in London, and you know there was people kind of selling their tokens and projects, and I was like, well, how do I buy that? Could I send you some pounds? And could you give me some of your tokens? And they were like, no, you need to send me crypto to get crypto. And I was like, well, how do I get hold of crypto? You know, this is the first I'm hearing of this. And so generally, you know, the more meetups I went to, they pointed me towards CoinFloor, which was the UK's biggest exchange for Bitcoin to GBP. And they accepted bank deposits. And so I was like, you know, got to know CoinFloor. And during that was when I met my co-founder, Mark Lamb, because he was the founder of CoinFloor. And we got together and, you know, it was just so coincidentally just so happened that, you know, he was starting to discover the power of derivatives trading in crypto and how it is sort of compared to spot volumes. It was such a small fraction of the market, how it had so much further to grow, and obviously knew everything about crypto and nothing, next to nothing about derivatives. And I was literally the mirror of him, where I knew zero about crypto and a lot about derivatives. And so we kind of made a good match, and that's how it kind of landed in the crypto space by accident.
That makes sense. Yeah. So you got to crypto initially through trading. What got you started on trading? What took you down that road?
So trading was something that I, you know, growing up in, I went to university in London and studied economics there. And obviously, you know, City University is at the heart of the city of London, surrounded by the banks. They're all sort of, you know, half a mile apart in the square, famous square mile. And you kind of hear the stories about it. And I did an internship during the middle of my degree with NatWest Bank at the time in their kind of markets section and banking section. And so I got this interest in trading. And at university, I applied to a bunch of trading firms and got a job offer with actually an American firm out of Radnor, Pennsylvania, called Cooper Neff, which was one of the big options trading houses, both in the US and in London, and became a trainee trader and worked my way up the ranks there.
Very cool. So when you started trading, right, you got that bug in college, and I was the same way, right? I did the derivatives, the portfolio management program in college, where, you know, it's a portion of the college endowment, and they're like, you know, we're going to set 25-20 year olds out on this money and see what happens, right? And, you know, of course, this was in 2007-2008, so no matter what we bought, we weren't going to win. So when you started on your trading journey, like what were you trying to do, right? Because everyone comes into trading with the, at least in my experience, with the idea that it's all about the money. But at some point it changes, right? Did you have a similar experience?
It was all about the money. Totally right. Because, you know, you sort of go down onto the trading floor, which I started on the LIFE, which is the London International Financial Futures Exchange. So like CME, the equivalent in London was called LIFE. And I was down there on the first day, and you see like thousands of people in colored jackets waving their arms and trading and, you know, making vast amounts of money and losing vast amounts of money. And all of a sudden you get, you know, kind of fixated by money, not necessarily that from a, you know, I want to be the richest man in the world, but essentially your day was measured in money, because you would go back off end of the day upstairs and your boss would be like, hey, did you make money or did you lose money? And an hour later, the trainee traders or clerks would tell you what your P&L was for the day. And so, you know, and at the end of the week, there was your weekly P&L, and there was the monthly P&L, and then the quarterly P&L, and the annual P&L. So it was the mark, right? So, you know, everything that you would judge by. And so you sort of start, essentially, you know, it's very important at that point to sort of dissociate yourself from the P&L concept of money, because you might have had a $100,000 day. Well, it doesn't mean that you go out and spend $50,000 on a night out in London, because, you know, it's almost like, you know, you do your regular thing of going to your favorite restaurant or a bar or, you know, getting a takeaway. But meanwhile, in the background, you're having these huge six-figure days, sometimes seven-figure days. And, you know, that was kind of the first hardest part, I think, as a young trader, is to like not let it go to your head, good or bad, because obviously you could be destroyed, you know, kind of emotionally and character and confidence by a really bad day as well. And so you have to sort of have this emotional detachment from the money, from the P&L perspective, but obviously be cognizant of the fact that, you know, you get paid a bonus based on it. And if you keep losing money, you get fired. So you could also be blasé about it, say, you know, hey, you know, I'll just trade. I won't care about risk. I'll do whatever the hell I want because it's not my money kind of either, because that gives you a bad reputation. So it was a very, very complex psychological kind of game for a 21-year-old to comprehend. And obviously, I'm not alone. Everyone's been through this. So,
you know, I had a friend of mine who wrote a book, and the first question he asked me to read it, and it was like a trading psychology book. And the first question was, why do you trade? And at the time, I'd never thought about why I traded. Like, I knew I enjoyed it. So initially I'm like, well, for the money, of course. And then I just sat back for a minute and I'm like, I lost years of my life chasing after nothing, with nothing but negative P&L to show. And it wasn't about the money to me. It was the game. It was like Mario, right? And it was, I described it to somebody the other day. I was like, you know, it's kind of like that feeling back in, let's say it's 1988, it's Christmas time, and you've got this Christmas box under the tree, and you pull it out and you open it up, and it's that brand new Nintendo Entertainment System. You've never had the opportunity to try anything like this before. And so you're excited, just like trading. You're excited. You want to get into it. You want to learn. You pop in that Mario cartridge and you start playing, And, you know, first those little turtles, they take you out, right? And then you try a little bit longer and those turtles take you out again. And you keep failing and you fail, but you fail a little bit better each time, right? You get a little bit further down the level. And then eventually you reach the flagpole, you slide down the flagpole and, you know, you've won that level. And that, in my opinion, is exactly like trading. Because if you treat it like a game, use every loss or circumstance as a learning opportunity, you will continue to move forward until one day you're the one sliding down the flagpole. Kind of like what you were just saying there.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because look, there's a great way of now, you know, we're just talking about me as a 21-year-old. Now, if you look at some of the kind of multi-billionaires who, you know, in trading, now they're still in the game, right? And it's just, so it's clearly not about the money. You look at, you know, Don Wilson at DRW, Bill DeSoma at Jump, you look at Vinny Viola at Virtue, for example. And these are all guys that were senior traders when I was a junior trader in the same pit. So we used to stand actually, you know, certainly for Don and, you know, Vinny was upstairs, but his firm had many traders downstairs. But essentially these guys are billionaires multiple times over, $5-10 billion, you know, of net worth each, but yet they turn up at 7 a.m. like they did as a 21-year-old and work till 7 p.m. and go home. So it's clearly not about the money, because they could have retired 10 years ago, 20 years ago, right? So it is a game. It is a money is a way of measuring your progression in the game. And, you know, it's a fascinating profession to be in, because just like I found, you know, during my career as a trader, you know, no single day is the same. You know, you don't go and file pieces of paper. You don't go and say, hey, I need to pull out a report. You know, you have no idea what's going to happen when you click your screens on and read the news and get ready to trade. And every single day is totally different. Now, from the trading side, at least from the traditional, or we call TradFi side, at least you had the weekends to yourself, right? Now in crypto, of course, it's way worse because it's 24/7. So you don't even get that, you know, Friday night, I've got a really bad position, but hey, nothing I can do about it because the market's closed. I'll stress about it on Monday. Was kind of a way of switching off. In crypto, you know, you've been marked to market by the second with no respite, you know, so it's way more brutal.
Yeah. when you were saying that you went from trading to crypto and then to CoinFlex, did you go straight to the idea of I want to create a platform, or were you like, I'm going to trade it for a while? Like what was the gap between those two points?
Yeah, it's a great question, because obviously I've only ever been a trader, and CoinFlex is an exchange. And so I approached it from a trading perspective. But once I kind of got to speak to Mark, we kind of figured out that, you know, it was great being an exchange, because, you know, we grew up trading on CME and Eurex and Life. And you're like, wow, this huge, you know, marketplaces where buyers and sellers meet and they kind of make fees. And you always know that there's no such thing as a bad day, because you always earn fees. You might earn a little bit, medium, a lot. But, you know, at least you didn't have the kind of stresses of positions. And so for me, it was sort of a way to try, you know, the other side of the fence, essentially. You know, for the first time in my career, after 20 years of being on the pricing side, was to go become the exchange side. And crypto, because it was so new, it actually allowed me to kind of take my knowledge and add value to building products. And that's what we've done at CoinFlex. You know, we've built yield-bearing stable coins like Flex USD, automated market making. These are all products that and trading activities that I've traded my whole career. Basis trading, which we create Flex USD, market making, which is now automated market making, is a big deal in DeFi. We were the first exchange to bring it to futures trading. And so, you know, we're bringing, you know, what fascinated me about crypto is that it's literally the democratization of finance, because it's the first time in history that you as Christopher can trade against DRW, against B2C2, against an old lady out of Japan, or wherever it might be, all in the same order book. And it's, you know, there is no barriers to entry. You know, if you want to trade on carbon using IG on CME, I mean, it's going to take you days, weeks to even get your certification to be allowed to do it, you know, and even then, you know, you might have to put a minimum amount of $10,000 to trade. Whereas in crypto, you can put, you know, deposit a fraction of a Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash and or Ethereum, and with $50 or $100, you can experiment, learn and grow, which is obviously in this modern day, you know, outside of you know, Robin Hood type apps. But if you really want to be a professional trader, it's a very, very expensive process and very prohibitive, right, in equities and in traditional stock trading.
Yeah. So while you were setting up the exchange, one would assume that everything was flawless and perfect and there was no stress, but there probably was a lot of stress, a lot of headaches, and a lot of things that you had to overcome in order to make this happen. What were some of the difficulties that you ran across?
The difficulties really is because I wasn't a techie, or I'm not familiar with code. So, you know, we spend a lot of time designing products, and then, you know, you kind of have to translate financial market knowledge to a developer who knows nothing about finance, and I know nothing about code. And so for Mark and I, really, it was, you know, kind of, you know, crossing that bridge with each other and with the devs. Now, I had a way harder issue on top of that, which Mark doesn't, which was around blockchain. And, you know, I was very, very new about blockchain technology and how that works as well. So I had that extra loop of learning, which is obviously fascinating, but extremely stressful, as you said. And, you know, one of the, you know, revolutions essentially of this kind of new paradigm with this, you know, with going into Web3 now as well. And, you know, there's a lot of jargon and very little about it. But what's great about it, about all, everything we've done in crypto and new technologies, because of the rise of cloud-based technology, you can launch businesses relatively cheaply right now. If you look back, you know, even 10 years ago and you wanted to be an exchange, well, you needed a massive data room in Aurora in Chicago or in LD4 in London, and you need to spend millions of dollars on servers and security and all kinds of stuff. Now you take it to CoinFlex and any crypto exchange, and we launch on AWS or Azure or Google Cloud, and, you know, your monthly bills are $100,000, and that's the capex that you put down. So it's very, very pro innovation. So you're encouraged to try things. You know, you can spin up a little server on the side and experiment with your developer, break it, rebuild it. And so that was the kind of real kind of eureka moment for me, was the fact that build and break and try again, build and break and try again was an amazing motto, you know, and it really encouraged you to not worry about failing and then getting back on the horse and rebuilding again.
You know, build and break and try again. It's almost as if you spent time as a trader building a system, breaking the system, and trying it again, right? You see, One of the things I like to do in my interviews is I like to connect the dots, right? So I think earlier on, maybe all that trading and everything you did in the derivative space really helped you overcome some of those obstacles to get CoinFlex off the ground, right?
No, I think you're right. You know, even just from a emotional and face perspective, when you speak to sort of investors and customers, you know, you even take the biggest exchanges in the world, like Binance, for example. They're no different to us, even though they're number one. And, you know, we're in the sort of second, you know, we're in the top 10, probably at the bottom range of it. And, you know, there's something breaking every single hour. And yet, you know, it's like the swan. You know, you see the head of the swan, and everything's fine, but you're not seeing under the water with the rapid feet movements and the panic that's going on. And, you know, it could be very simple as the customer support chat's broken down and there's a bunch of irate customers and someone needs to fix the bug and get it back up in line. Or, you know, there's a outage on Cloudflare and about, you know, half your customers can't access the platform. And, you know, it's just constantly going on. And the trading background about like soaking this up, smiling, you know, when like, you know, when you were kind of on the trading floor or in a trading room, you never let the person next to you know that you're having a bad day. You know, you'd always be, hey, how's it going, whatever. And you could be like sweating. You're just praying for non-farm payrolls to go your way, but you never show it emotionally, you know, and it's a little bit like that. So, you know, right in the middle of a really stressful moment, you know, you have customers like, you know, buzzing you and saying, hey, how's it going? You're like, fantastic, you know, even though you're kind of sweating away and your shirt stuck to your back, you know. So,
yeah, that's super, super interesting. You know, I couldn't imagine the idea of going and creating an exchange, but you know, it takes the innovation gene, I guess you could say, to make that happen. So now, earlier this year, or at least in 2021, from what I've seen, I feel like this has been one of the craziest years ever for trading. Because, you know, earlier on this year, we had the GameStop and the AMC and then the Dogecoin. And then recently we had the NFT space and the Shiba Inus and all the other garbage coins that are going on out there.
Yeah.
How do you guys deal with that and handle it and work with that kind of boom and bust cycle that seems to be happening right now? How does that work in y'all's system? Does that break anything? Does that bring new participants, or you tell me?
It actually, yeah, it is not easy because if we're a spot exchange, you could just list whatever you wanted, and there was no real, you know, outside of brand damage because someone, there was a very scammy coin that you listed and people kind of lost tons of money on.
Like like a Squid Game token, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where it just sort of, you know, disappeared overnight. So that you have that kind of brand reputation, you have to be careful about with spot. Now with CoinFlex, because we're a derivatives exchange, you've got not just the brand risk, but you've also got the fact that customers will have leveraged positions and you need to be able to liquidate them in a timely manner, or otherwise the exchange takes the loss. So really, when, you know, a community comes with us and say, oh, well, you know, please list Shiba, which they did, and we listed it, you know, 3 months ago, we also have to like look around liquidity providers. Who are the market makers? Who can we trust to provide backstop emergency liquidity? You know, who, you know, how much leverage do we allow users to, you know, to, what's the max position size? So there's so many complex calculations that go into listing a coin. Whereas from a customer's perspective, they're like, you know, well, I listed today, list it.
Just buy and sell. Just, like, what's the hard part
correct.
Here? Yeah.
What's the hard part here? You know, just sticking on the exchange. But so much thought and risk discussions go into every single one of these coins that we launch.
So that reminds me, you know, when all of the GameStop AMC stuff was going on, or January and February, when Robinhood shut down the buy function, right? The only thing you were able to do was sell. I had heard later on, it was explained to me by a hedge fund. They were like, yeah, they had to, because they couldn't keep track of the liquidity of all the shares that were being bought. And I had no idea, right? Because I was on the other side of it. I was playing AMC too, just for fun. And I was like, this is some shit, right? How can they shut us down like this? And, you know, there are so many people who lost so much money because they had no idea how to control their risk. And then when you take away half of the buy and sell equation by the broker, that's scary. So have you guys ever run into an issue like that yet? And if so, how did you work around it?
No, we haven't, because, you know, the minute you do something like that and make it very restrictive, your customers will walk away. I'll never come back again. Right. So it's, you know, sometimes we have slowdowns because there's just a huge volume of trading and so latency issues. But we, you know, what we do normally, if there's a lot of volatility, like the example of GameStop, what we do is kind of increase the margin requirements on the platform. So we never halt trading. But what we do is that we will suddenly, you know, double, triple margin. So all of a sudden, there's like way, you know, leverage comes down in the system. You know, we will, you know, kind of widen price bands to make sure there's no sort of fat finger trades. There's a bunch of countermeasures that we put in place, but we would absolutely not stop one side of the trade. And obviously, you know, with this GameStop example, there was also this conspiracy theories that some of the large market makers are deliberately, you know, kind of forced this on Robinhood, you know, for the payment for order flow side, because they were just being cleaned out from the buy side. They could just like getting lifted on the offers constantly, and they could not buy it back, right? So, you know, that's you know, I wouldn't completely discount something like, you know, like that, you know, it's as well as saying, you know, there was obviously this whole custodial thing of, you know, who's got the certificate. We needed to match it off before we could sell it, you know, from a settlement perspective. But yeah, I mean, the thing about crypto is, you know, anyone can send a coin. You know, you had coins in one exchange, you send it across to CoinFlex, and it's done in seconds, right? Or minutes, depending on the blockchain that you use. So, you know, for us, you know, on any exchange, we would absolutely not block it, because it'd be very obvious that it was you doing it for some deliberate or nefarious reason, rather than a blockchain-based reason, because everyone can track these transactions on the blockchain.
Yeah. So did you guys run into anything like the Squid Game, where it was a scam the whole time, and then all of a sudden the rug got pulled? Has that come across y'all's desk at all, or have you been able to avoid those?
We've been, you know, touch wood, we've been able to avoid those so far. You know, we only touch sort of coins that are reasonably well known and on multiple exchanges as a starting point. So we're somewhat, you know, immune, I guess, from that. You know, a lot of the sort of rug pulls, as they call it, you know, crypto term of scamming, it happens on DeFi platforms because obviously it's permissionless. So anyone can lynch, you know, you can list a Christopher coin in seconds and put it on Uniswap.
I'd love that.
right? Yeah. So my point is that, you know, so it's you know, it's permissionless, and that's the upside of it, and that's the downside of it. And you can't have one without the other.
That's very good. Okay. Because I've just a smidge over at Coinbase. And while the Squid Game stuff was going on, I was trying to pull it up over there and it was not available. And I didn't understand. I was like, okay. I mean, I don't know the space to see. I didn't even realize that there was like a DeFi space. That's you know, there's crypto and then there's DeFi. That's even further far from it.
Exactly. So we like Coinbase, like, and ourselves, we're centralized. So, you know, you have humans that you interact with, like myself. And so, you know, we are kind of a natural audit block vetter, you know, for it. Now, obviously, there's no guarantees because there's thousands of coins, right? So, and long term, some of them may just naturally die anyway, rather than them being scams or rug pulls. But on DeFi, of course, you can't police it. I mean, that's the whole nature of it, right? So now the SEC wants to, I guess, but you know, we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah. So what's y'all's goal over there? You can tell I'm from Texas. What's y'all's goal over there with CoinFlex? What are we trying to get to? What is our ultimate goal here?
Our ultimate goal basically is to be the biggest money platform in crypto. The home of crypto yields is our tagline. So, you know, trade crypto, earn crypto. We sit in a very interesting intersection because on the one side, you've got the pure exchanges like Binance and FTX. On the other side of crypto, you've got this what you call borrow lender. So you could like banks essentially for crypto, where you can deposit your Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash and, you know, Ethereum and earn returns like a savings account. They then lend it out to trading firms and other counterparties and kind of make a net interest margin. We actually sit in a very interesting spot right in the middle of the intersection of both these sides, because we have natural yield products where the lender, which is could be yourself earning yield on your crypto, and the borrower, which is a trading firm borrowing crypto to trade, meet together in a marketplace. And so we're very uniquely positioned that, you know, lenders can earn more because there's no middleman on the interest rate side. It's an order book, which is open to anyone 24/7. And of course, borrowers get access to cheaper funds because, again, they're not being marked up by the middleman. So essentially, you know, we feel there's a, you know, we're a marketplace for buyers and sellers of US dollars, in essence, and other crypto. And so we want to be the biggest money platform in crypto.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you guys handle any of the NFT space? I mean, I don't really understand the way that all works on the blockchain. Does that go through CoinFlex at all?
No, it doesn't. I mean, we could do. We just started to play with the kind of NFTs because we have this arena competition where you kind of, as a trader now, you know, you asked me earlier about, you know, you're okay being on video now. Obviously, in crypto, there's a lot of kind of, you know, people who don't want to be known, right? So we have these avatars that you can create to be a trader. So, and then and the winners of these competitions get these NFTs, which is, you know, which they get to keep. And, you know, it has a record of, you know, their how well they've traded, their P&L and all this sort of stuff, which even though you don't know it's who the person is, you have this kind of cartoony characters which become mintable as NFTs. And then you can use the, you know, Ethereum network and or Bitcoin Cash, which is smart BCH, accept 20 to send NFTs to each other and buy and sell it on OpenSea, which is one of the biggest platforms, you know, for it right now. But it's a space that I'm not, you know, hugely familiar with either. It's obviously very topical. It feels very bubbly in some of these prices for, you know, bored apes and stuff. But hey, who knows?
You know, my whole concern with the NFT space is the lack of fungibility, right? Because some people would say, oh, that makes it rare and unique and special and important. And my differing view on that is that's what makes it risky. Because if you don't have the ability to get in and out of the trade, if you don't have the liquidity that comes with a fungible asset, that could be a recipe for disaster. Because, I mean, if you bought a bored monkey or a bored ape and nobody else wants to buy it from you, I mean, that's the greater fool theory in finance, is that you're the last person. In theory, there's always a greater fool that'll buy it off of you. But at some point, you're the last one standing. And that's the part that concerns me on the NFT space.
So, no, I'm with you. Yeah.
So tell me, as we're coming to the end here, you know, you've come a long way from, you know, City College in London to Hong Kong running the CoinFlex exchange over there. What's some of the biggest lessons along the way that you're like, man, I am so glad I had the opportunity to learn that. Even if it did cost me some money, it has transformed me in this way.
I think one of the biggest lessons is really around not being afraid to fail, you know, which, you know, in, you know, on the, it's like you correctly pointed out, it's really from the trading days, you start learning to, you know, up days, down days, up days. And I think, you know, the key thing was I used to like, you know, oh, I had a terrible week and be just like, you know, be like a, you know, just a horrible person at the weekend because I didn't want to see my friends or speak to somebody. And you just kind of carry that, you know. And I think it's the key lesson I've learned through life is just to like to take each day, you know, be grateful for each day and to take each day, you know, as it is, because every single day has got a good part and a bad part. Now, there's no way that you should kind of, you know, spend the whole day as I did as a 21-year-old saying, good day, bad day, good day, bad day, you know, marking it down in that sense. There is, you know, as you get older as well, I guess, you know, it's, you know, money is a means to an end. It's great to, you know, eat in nice places or, you know, have a nice car or, you know, and it's nice to have a roof over your shoulder. But really, at some point, as you know, we as I mentioned, around these, you know, multi-billionaires who are still in the trading game and who could have left years ago and still do it, it's beyond money. And it's more around, you know, building a legacy for yourself, whether that legacy goes on towards, you know, charitable works, which is something I'm very, very keen on. And or whether you want to just change the world, whether you want to bring, you know, democracy to countries that don't have it, or whether you want to question democracy and become a, you know, an authoritarian type regime. And then obviously, you know, that's a very interesting thing that's going on right now, right? You've got the US versus China, and, you know, they're both trying to show the rest of the world that one's better than the other, one system is better than the other. And whatever your life goals is, and everyone's got different ones, and is to sort of work towards that. And unfortunately, to influence a lot of things, you need money. And so maybe, you know, that's, you know, to make a mark on charity, you can, you know, yes, you can give your time, but it obviously goes way, way more with your dollar, right, than your actual time. So, you know, the multiple effect of that is just completely different. So it's to sort of view money from doing good rather than from a, you know, new watch or, you know, whatever new car perspective is, but one of the biggest lessons, right? You know, as a 22-year-old, I remember my first big bonus buying, you know, like literally a top of the range BMW, and I didn't drive to work, and I lived 10 minutes from work. I mean, it was absolutely pointless, but it was the thing I had to do, and I was so proud of it, you know. And looking back now, it's just like, oof, you know, cringeworthy. So.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, thank you for sharing that. And thank you for your time today, Sudhu. This has been really great. I'm so glad I got the opportunity to chat with you and learn your story and hear, you know, how CoinFlex came to be. This has been a really great time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Christopher. Really wonderful to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you guys for tuning into today's How to Trade Stocks Options podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, and enable notifications. That way you never miss any of the tools, tips, and tricks that we upload every single week. Help you trade faster and trade smarter, and I'll see you on the next episode.
Okay, so what'd you think? That was pretty incredible, right?
I have three special free gifts for you over at 10minutestocktrader.com. That's the Triple Stock Profits ebook you can get for free. That's a bullish power cheat sheet that you can get for free. And if that wasn't enough, at the brand new web class, How to Easily Discover Proven Backtested 100% Plus Winners, that is for free as well. You can get these three free gifts, all yours, at 10minutestocktrader.com. The Triple Stock Profits ebook, the free web class, and the bullish power cheat sheet. And all you gotta do is go to 10minutestocktrader.com.
Hey, if you like this video, let me know by leaving me a like below, and then subscribe and share it with somebody you think could use it as well. Be sure to comment below with your biggest takeaway from this episode and any suggestions you have for future episodes. And finally, make sure you watch these other videos to help you trade faster and trade smarter, and I'll see you on the next episode.
10minutestocktrader.com content is for information and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or recommendation that any security, futures contract, options contract, transaction, or other financial instrument or strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities can involve high risk and the potential for total loss of any funds invested. 10minutestocktrader.com and Christopher Yule, through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. Investment information provided may not be suitable for all investors, and is provided without respect to the individual investor's and audience's financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. 10MinuteStockTrader.com and Christopher Yule are not in the business of trading securities trades, nor does it direct client commodity accounts or give commodity trading advice, tailored to any particular client situation or investment objectives. 10MinuteStockTrader.com and Christopher Yule are not licensed financial advisors, registered investment advisors, or registered broker-dealers. Stocks, options, futures, futures options, and other financial instruments not included here involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. You alone are responsible for making your investment and financial trading decisions, and for evaluating the merits and risks associated with the use of any financial security and broker platform. For more information, please visit 10MinuteStockTrader.com/legal. And thanks for stopping by.